Right.
All right. Yeah.
No, both? I don't know. Here, I'll try this. Sego, sego, guego. Skawanadi, you juts. As a Mohawk from Ganawage, one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, Jojage, the island of Montreal, is part of our traditional territory. We Ganyangehaga, as we have again begun to call ourselves, have a beautiful piece of oration. Oh, I lost my spot. It's a beautiful greeting that we say at the beginning of every gathering. It's called the Ohodo Gardiwatakwa, words before all else. I'll just say the very first bit because we only have 20 minutes and it takes a long time. But I think the greeting is relevant here because of how it positions participation. Today we gather together and remind ourselves that we, the people, have been given the responsibility to live in balance and harmony with one another and with all living things. We think of all the people who are here today and of those who would have liked to be here but couldn't make it. We think of the people we have met and the ones we have not met yet. We remember that all of the people who live on every part of Mother Earth are connected, related, and bound together in the same circle of life. So we bring our minds together as one as we extend our greetings, express our love, and give thanks to all the people here and everywhere. Now our minds are one.
We want to thank our hosts for the opportunity for speaking today. It's wonderful to be at the Musée d'Art Contemporain, particularly at this moment when the Beat Nation exhibition is upstairs, featuring the beautiful and provocative work of many of our talented Indigenous colleagues. Next time, we'll have to get more of them down here with us. So, participation. One of the goals of Aboriginal Territories in Cyberspace, ABTEC, is to ensure the participation of Indigenous people in the great building project that is underway as we create cyberspace. The archipelago of websites, video games, virtual worlds, data constructs, and other network places that we inhabit. What is an Aboriginal territory in cyberspace? Why is it necessary? Much has been written about how Western media technologies affected Native people post-contact. For example, how the camera in the hands of the European explorers, or tourists, as we call them, shaped the way Native people were seen for centuries to come. How might things have been different, one wonders, if the Indians had had the cameras? We see this present moment as possibly different. Native people have gained enough ground against the forces of assimilation and eradication that we have almost as much accessibility as the general population to the current new technologies. We are interested in strategies for ensuring that our people represent ourselves this time around, rather than be represented by, well, the tourists.
Center stage almost. Our first effort to that end was called Cyber Power. I don't usually read, so that's why I'm kind of nervous, but I want
to
say
that in order to coordinate.
It was a cutting edge project in 1997 that used a brand new software called The Palace. Does anyone remember it? Which described itself as a graphical chat room. Today, online chatting is a regular part of our day, but in 1997, it was nothing short of amazing to be able to exchange real-time text messages with someone anywhere in the world for free. And in the palace, not only could numerous people chat simultaneously, but you could see each other represented as avatars. I thought, this is what we need. Native artists working in the contemporary milieu needed a way to communicate with one another over the vastness of North America and the world. Cyber Power was all about participation. Native artists participating in the digital revolution. I asked, can Native people make digital art? Because that was actually a question at that time. Is it still Native art if it's not made with beads and feathers? The answer, of course, was yes. Over its four iterations until 2004, Cyber Power continued to ask Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal artists and writers to help build a virtual space on the internet to call our own.
Is that you now?
Yeah, it's me. One thing that CyberPOWA taught us was how important it was for our people to be producers, not just consumers of new media, referencing back to your last slide. We had to teach people how to create in cyberspace. This led to more questions. Teach what? Whom? How? The answers to those questions became another project called the Skins Workshops in Aboriginal Storytelling and Video Game Design. We've held four of these since 2008, and we're going to show a short video that describes the project.
My name is Donyet Datigalil. I go to KSS, and my role in the game is a lead designer. What inspired me to base the story, I mean the game, on the stories of the Flying Head was I didn't really see any games out there that had our culture.
Odzi, Rise of the Ganyaga Hala Legends, is a video game made by students from Ganawage Survival School, the high school of the Ganawage Mohawk First Nation. Odzi serves as an example of how Aboriginal stories can be told in new ways with new technologies. The game also shows how Aboriginal youth can be actively engaged in the making of those stories. Odzi was produced by Aboriginal Territories in Cyberspace, also known as ABTEC. We are an international research network of artists, activists, and technologists collaborating on a series of initiatives to expand and encourage Aboriginal participation in the shaping of new media. We designed a curriculum that brought together Aboriginal storytelling and game design to encourage students to integrate stories from their community into video games and virtual environments. That curriculum was tested in a 10-month workshop called Skins. The process started off with a lot of discussion about Aboriginal storytelling, where we talked about stories that the students knew and that the teachers knew from the Ganawage community.
When they were looking at the stories themselves, it was good to reflect back on culture and to touch base back with our roots. They talked a lot about some of the scary stories that they heard as kids, like the skeleton story that they looked at, and then there's also the hoof lady and the monkey dog and critters and creatures that people don't really hear about too much anymore, but the stories are still there and reviving them is a great thing.
As the process continued, what ended up happening was the kids were able to integrate all these stories to put into a game. And so it was like they created this new narrative that encompassed all the other stories that we had told. So in the game, what happens is there's a hunter.
The hunter is an Iroquois man, and he is on a mission to stop Flying Head from attacking the village.
Hunter's not gonna really have like a full-bodied appearance, but mostly you're just gonna see like his arms, because it's a first-person game. The Flying Head, he's like this big monstrous head that uses like his hair to get around.
The Flying Head story really encompasses a lot of that part about being true who you are, being a good person, fighting for what's right, doing the best that you can to try to help other people by removing anything that's chaos or danger from the path.
Once they had sort of decided on the story, we told them they had to make a paper prototype for a playtesting session. They made this great big map of the game. They drew the whole path, and this is where the first village is, this is where your village is, here are the trees, this is where the Flying Head comes out. It was so amazing to hear the story and see it in action.
Then we moved into fairly intensive technical workshops, where we started the students off with Second Life as a way to get them used to moving in and working in 3D space, and then moved on to using Blender for 3D animation and modeling. Finally, we moved all of those assets into the Unreal 3 engine to create the playable level that is the actual game. So
been very interesting to observe the students as we progress through the workshop. The students spent a huge number of hours that they didn't actually have to be in school working on the project. We are out in Gatawagi for 2-day intensive workshops every month. And then essentially every week, there's a smaller group of us that go out for 2 hours to teach in the actual class time.
And then having to teach it the next couple of days by myself was a challenge, but at the same time, it was a good challenge because work has to be interesting and your course has to be interesting or you lose them. Some of the young people that participated in the project and in the classwork were really quiet, really shy. Although they had drawing skills, they didn't have that confidence to go out there and do something serious with it. And what I saw was them blossom.
When Jason and I met with Oizogo at the very beginning of this process, well, of the Skins project actually happening, this was like, say, in August, she asked, you know, she was asking these questions, you know, what is this project? What are you going to do? What are you going to be teaching them? And finally she says, and what do yous want anyway? Why are yous doing this? And because it was Oizogo, who I've known for many years, I felt free enough to say, well, we want to change the world.
Yeah, it's really cool once you see it all coming together in the end and you can actually make out what you're supposed to be modeling. You're like, yes.
All right, so we're still on this idea of a self-determined virtual space. While working on Skins, as you saw, I was introduced to Second Life, a once quite popular, massively multiplayer online world. As was the case with the Palace, I saw in it the potential for a virtual space to call home. Second Life, as probably most of you here know, they sell land in the form of islands. So I began to imagine what our own island might look like and what we would do there. Oh, a slide that works. Okay, so I thought there'd be like a sandbox, right, for building stuff in, resource room, the red cube gallery. Get it? White cube, red cube. Okay. UBRAE would be like the University of the Brave, kind of like that. That's what I thought the island would kind of be called, actually, like this place for people to come and learn. Brave New World, Braves, Indian Braves. Central fire story circle there where people could, maybe we could have videotaped people telling stories and then, you know, stream it into the world. Maybe we would, you know, we just thought there's endless things we could do. And then, you know, for people who ever, you know, go to Second Life and maybe other places where you have avatars, you do need a place to change. You do need a little privacy. So we had to have a little privacy tent there. And yeah, so what we did is we did buy an island, finally. And believe me, the irony of a bunch of Indians spending real money on virtual land is never old for me. We use it as a teaching space for the Skins participants. So that's next slide, darling. We use it as a space for art installation and performance. Yeah. But most of all, we use it as a set for Time Traveler TM. Time Traveler TM is a multi-platform project, like it says in my bio, and we already heard this, that features a Machinima series. And for those of you, those very probably few of you who don't know, Machinima is the practice of making movies in virtual worlds. Time Traveler TM tells the story of a Mohawk man from the future who's lost and adrift in a hyper-consumerist, overcrowded world. 9 episodes take us to various historical events of importance to First Nations. While the work operates on a number of levels, 2 of the goals were to portray Indigenous people as 1, alive and kicking in the future, and 2, technologically savvy. So I had wanted to show you a bunch of clips. You can go through, maybe we can go through, I'll tell. Yeah, as you go through, I will tell you that there just was not enough time to really like try and edit you some clips out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you about 5 minutes of episode 6, and I guess to set up the story a tiny bit, Hunter eventually meets, he meets this woman who gets a pair of the glasses Did I explain that part? No, see, I thought I was going to show you episode one. So in the story, there is a technology called Time Traveler TM, and it's these blue glasses that allow the wearer to select a date or a keyword and go to that date. But they're not actually time traveling. It's more like the holodeck on Star Trek, where like the event is recreated for the wearer in living color. But there's some like glitch in the system that occurs, allowing Garakuhawi, the woman, to get a pair of these glasses in our time. And so she goes on this little quest to find Hunter. And get some answers. So that's basically, I'm going to show you parts of episode six right now. And yes, I think you'll be able to see some of the, I could just talk forever about this as I know, but here it is.
All right, where to next? Who is this Richard Oakes? Never heard of him.
Welcome to Alcatraz, little lady. Registration is right over there. After that, get yourself to the main cell block. All women are on kitchen duty today.
Can we get a picture of you two with the turkey?
Hey, that's Richard Oakes driving the pickup. Come on!
Let's load it up, boys. Hi, how you doing? Nice day today.
Richard, do you have a statement?
Yes, we do. To the Great White Father and his people, fellow citizens, we are asking you to join with us in our attempt to better the lives of all Indian people. We, the Native Americans, reclaim the land known as Alcatraz Island in the name of all American Indians by right of discovery. We wish to be fair and honorable in our dealings with the Caucasian inhabitants of this land, and hereby offer the following treaty. We will purchase said Alcatraz Island for $24 in glass beads and red cloth, a precedent set by the white man's purchase of a similar island 300 years ago. We will give to the inhabitants of this island a portion of that land for their own to be administered by the Bureau of Caucasian Affairs in perpetuity, for as long as the sun shall rise and the rivers go down to the sea. We will further guide the inhabitants in the proper way of living. We will offer them our religion, our education, our life ways, in order to help them achieve our level of civilization, and thus raise them, all our white brothers, up from their savage and unhappy state. We offer this treaty in good faith and wish to be fair and honorable in our dealings with all white men. Alcatraz is not an island. Alcatraz is an inspiration. It is the idea that you can control your own destiny and self-determine your own future.
Richard, how long are you prepared to stay here?
A long time.
Richard, I just wanted to say hi. I'm from Ganawage.
Little sister, Segu, I'm from Mogwazasne, but I know Ganawage very well. Who's your mother? It's nice to have a little bit of home out here on the rock. I hope you're hungry. Did you see all the turkeys?
How could I miss them? What's the deal?
Thanksgiving, of course. Americans love Indians on Thanksgiving. They've been donated by the good people of the San Francisco Bay Area. Hey, there's another Mohawk here. A real Los Calaguete. Come on, I'll introduce you. Hey, Hunter, come here.
Hey.
Hunter, I want you to meet another Mohawk. Little sister?
We've met.
We have?
Ooh.
It was a long time ago. I was 4 years old.
Huh. So how old were you, Hunter? 5?
This is highly irregular.
Richard!
Okay, so thanks. Excellent. There's going to be just about a two-minute more clip of episode 9 now. So they've fallen in love, and I don't even know if you need to know more. They've done a bunch of adventures, but I think just see the tiny little bit here. That's so. What do I do, Jason?
Your cursor's just click. It should work.
You do it.
I think yes.
The glasses are more addictive than Bejeweled. After I finish my final semester, Hunter and I go on a time traveler joyride. We visit Pocahontas in England. I had no idea she was Queen Anne's BFF. We walk with Sacagawea to the shore of the Pacific and see the big fish, as she called it. But the best stuff is the future. Well, my future. It's all well in the past for Hunter. Indigenous peoples everywhere have made incredible advancements. It starts when Quebec finally separates from Canada. The Cree promptly separate from Quebec and form a confederacy with all their cousins to the west. The Haudenosaunee soon follow, then the Anishinaabe, then the Blackfoot. I guess all our hard work finally pays off. I thought you said there weren't any Indians around these days. We're stronger than ever.
I never said that. I said I wanted to learn more about my heritage.
So why didn't you just go to Gunawage? It's just a few minutes away by jetpack.
What? Just show up and say, I'm a Mohawk? Teach me? Help me find my path in life? I went with what I know and love. Edutainment.
Alcatraz was an inspiration. Aboriginal territories in cyberspace is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for how we would like our people to engage with new technology and claim space and voice in these new territories. Aptek Island materialized that metaphor. While other projects we undertake don't operate on the island per se, but rather they operate in the metaphor, it does provide an anchor around which we construct our identities as Aboriginal people exploring cyberspace. Participation in new media is also a metaphor for participating in the future. That's our real end game, imagining what our people will be like in the future, 100, 500, even 1,000 years from now, and devising strategies to get us there. Given the politics of the last 500 years, the exercise of simply imagining ourselves as still existing that long is radical. Imagining ourselves as thriving is revolutionary.
Existing.
Thriving.
Participating.
Wedo.
Nyawa.
Thank you.